Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 134, Salmon Season. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things, being inspired. That's what we're all about here at the Kitchen Counter. So very happy you're listening today. So glad you're joining us. Today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite things, and that is salmon. I was looking back over the history of the different topics I've covered on the show in the past, and I noticed that seafood is generally underrepresented. So I think I need to hop in here and bring that average up a little bit. So why not salmon? And we're going to talk about that in a few more minutes. But before I get there, just a couple of bits of housekeeping and the regular sort of announcements. And first of all, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/134. That's just the numbers, 134. That'll take you to the show notes. And if I mention any links or tools or other resources on the show that you want to check out, I will provide the links in those show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/134. Also, I want to remind you that if you'd like to get a hold of me just to say hi or ask a question, or if you have an idea for a topic for an upcoming show, anything like that, send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you. You could also, now I'm testing this out, send me a voice message from the website. So if you go over to kitchencounterpodcast.com, whether you're on a desktop or a mobile, if you're on a mobile, you should see a little tab at the top of the screen. If you're on a desktop, it should be in the upper right corner of your browser window that will say, send a voice message. And if you click on that, you can record just using the microphone in your smartphone or a built-in microphone in your laptop or any other microphone, earbuds or whatever you've got plugged in. You can actually send me a short audio message. Maybe you want to ask a question without typing an email, and maybe, I don't know, you'd like to hear your voice on the podcast someday. That would be a lot of fun. I'm going to plan on taking a few of these that I get here, maybe in the next episode, and playing some of those messages I get, and maybe answering some questions and incorporating you into the actual audio of the show. So check that out. And finally, if Facebook is your thing and you're interested in engaging with me and with other listeners of the show, check out our closed Facebook group for the Kitchen Counter Podcast. We call it the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. And you can find that community over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. That will redirect you to the Facebook page where you can ask to be let into the group and hang out with all of us other cool home cooking folks. So that's it. That's all my announcements this week. Nothing too major. So we're going to get right into the show topic. We're going to be talking about salmon. So why am I talking about salmon today? Well, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I wanted to do some more seafood topics. So salmon is a great one because, at least in the Pacific here, salmon season is starting to gear up in some places, at least some sport salmon fishing. And of course, like in Alaska, commercial salmon season is, I think, well underway. Or if it's not, it will be very, very soon. That's not even the real reason. I mean, you can get salmon all year round pretty much anywhere. But the other reason I really want to talk about salmon is it's probably my favorite seafood. It's up there near the very top of the list, if not at the very top of the list. And for me, a lot of it stems from the fact that I grew up in Oregon here in the Pacific Northwest. Salmon is a pretty big deal up here. And I grew up loving salmon. Not that we were huge salmon eaters, but when it came to seafood, salmon was always part of the equation. And I especially have very fond memories of eating smoked salmon that my father would smoke in his own like pine box smoker that he had built, out on our property. And I think I've shared that story before, but there was just something very special about that because it took a lot of preparation and it was a you know, it was like kind of an all morning mid afternoon sort of a process. We get up early and smoke the salmon, and then we'd end up with these delicious, smoky, briny chunks of salmon that we would enjoy for weeks afterwards. And of course, I'm talking about hot smoking salmon. That's different from, say, cold smoked salmon that you, you know, the stuff that kind of is really thinly sliced and it looks almost raw, where it's been brined and smoked, but at such a low temperature that it doesn't really cook the salmon. So hot smoking is brining the salmon, but smoking it at a temperature high enough that it actually cooked the salmon. You end up with two very different types of products. So yeah, hot smoked salmon, that's my jam right there. That's one of my favorite things to eat in the world. And you know, the other thing I love about salmon, at least for folks here in North America, I'm not as well versed about salmon availability in, say, Europe or other parts of the world, but salmon is fairly readily available all year round. And as far as fish goes, it's very versatile. You can do just about anything you want with a salmon. And you know what? It's extremely popular. It's when you look at statistics for the United States, at least, on seafood consumption, you know, shrimp is always number one year after year. It's been that way for quite a while. But, you know, usually in second or third, or, you know, jockeying neck and neck, there are tuna and salmon. So it's a very popular seafood in the United States. And of course, part of that is because a lot of salmon is canned and made available that way. That's, of course, a reason why tuna is always one of the most popular seafoods in the U.S. is because Americans eat a lot of canned tuna, right? And sometimes maybe I think salmon even has kind of a reputation for good or ill as kind of the boneless, skinless chicken breast of the sea. I always think of that because, you know, when you go out to like a hotel lunch or something like that, or you're at an event, it seems like there's always a lunch salad that either has like chicken on it or salmon on it. At least here in Oregon, that's the way it seems to be. So I think sometimes salmon gets a reputation as kind of a boring yet a little bit fancier take on a versatile protein like a chicken breast. But here's the thing about salmon. I have yet to find a salmon preparation that just doesn't work. Unlike a lot of other seafood, which, you know, depending on the type of fish you're using, the type of crustacean or whatever, shellfish, there's just certain things you wouldn't or shouldn't do with it. Whereas in salmon's case, I mean, you can eat it raw, you can poach it, you can bake, broil it, deep fry it, pan fry it, grill it, smoke it. And of course, canned salmon, you can make salmon jerky. You can do so much with salmon. So at the risk of going Forrest Gump on you, I know I sound like I'm going on and on about salmon, but my goal with this episode is if you're not at all familiar with salmon, or you're not a big fish cooker, or you're a little bit wary about it, you're just not sure how to approach it, because let's face it, salmon can be expensive and you don't want to screw it up. You don't want to spend money trying to cook something like a nice salmon fillet and then, you know, screw it up and then feel like you've wasted that money. I hope this episode is sort of an introduction and provides a couple of ideas for you to get started cooking salmon. And then for those of you who already cook salmon and are familiar with it and love it, I hope you find some interesting tidbits about salmon in this episode as well. So I'm going to start out by talking about, you know, what a salmon is, the different types of salmon you're likely to run into as a home cook. And then we'll start with that. And then towards the end, I'll jump into a couple of different salmon cooking methods that I think they're about as close to foolproof as you can get. So what is a salmon anyway? Well, so salmon are a type of anadromous fish, and they're usually found in coastal waters and freshwater streams and even occasionally lakes that are usually connected somehow to those coastal waters. In North America, you're looking at a distribution of North Pacific. So we're talking some salmon species that you can find off the coast of Northern California, but you're talking Northern California up through the coasts of Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, and then up into Alaska. And then historically, on the East Coast, we would have had wild Atlantic salmon, but we're going to talk about that in a moment. Now, you might think to yourself, how is it possible that a fish can live in both coastal seawater, you know, salt water, and in fresh water obviously not salt water. How can a fish do that? Well, when I said that salmon are anadromous, what that term means, and this is not exclusive to salmon, there's a few other fish that share this characteristic, but it's a fascinating trait that they have where they can actually adapt to both types of water. So what anadromous means basically is that they're born in fresh water. They soon thereafter migrate to coastal waters, ocean waters, salt water, where they live most of their life. And then when they're ready to spawn and have offspring, they actually migrate back into the freshwater zones, usually very near to where they were born in the first place. So they have a very interesting life cycle where they go from fresh to salt back to freshwater. And the other really interesting thing about salmon in relation to that cycle is that they change physically quite a lot from the time they are born and go out to the ocean in the coastal waters. You know, they look kind of like you expect an ocean fish to look. They're fairly large. They've got that kind of silver, shimmery blue skin. In most cases, they're shaped fairly, you know, long, narrow fish shaped, salmon shaped. I don't even know how to describe that. But what's interesting is when they head back up river, up the streams to spawn, in some species of salmon change quite dramatically in their appearance. So, for example, a sockeye salmon, also known as a red salmon, and again, we'll talk about the different salmons here in a second, it can look like your typical silvery bluish salmon when it's in the ocean. When it goes back upriver to spawn, it will change and its exterior will become this sort of bright red, and it almost doesn't even look like the same fish. The pink salmon doesn't just change color on the exterior, but it actually gets this like interesting hump on the top of its back. In fact, it has the nickname humpback or humpy salmon. So it changes not just in color, but in body shape as it goes back upriver to spawn. So salmon are very interesting fish. Because they're cold water fish, they tend to be a lot fattier and oilier than, say, warm water or temperate water fishes. And the other thing that probably sets salmon apart from most other fish that you come across in the fish market is their pink to reddish flesh color. Again, very interesting. Salmon are actually white fish. Their flesh is in its natural state, just kind of a white, maybe even a grayish, pearly colored flesh. Think like a halibut color or something like that. You know how flamingos aren't born pink, but it's based on their diet of a certain algae and crustaceans that they eat that give it that pink color. Exact same thing happening with salmon. Their flesh turns from pink and it ranges all the way to a deep red based on their diet. Now, I've danced around it already a little bit, but a lot of the confusion, or I think the intimidation factor when it comes to salmon for home cooks, is that there are several different species, subspecies of salmon. And in the market, it can be confusing when you see names like Chinook or coho or red or silver or sockeye or, you know, all these names for salmon. What do they mean? Are they all that different? How do I treat them when I'm cooking them in different ways? And that's not even to mention the question of fresh versus frozen or farmed versus wild. So there are a lot of variables when it comes to salmon that can trip up the home cook. So let's break down some of those right now. And I want to start out with fresh versus frozen. And by the way, this particular bit of advice really goes for any type of fish, I think. A lot of people poo-poo the idea of frozen fish because, why wouldn't you want fresh fish? Fresh fish is superior, right? Well, in many cases, it can be. But one of the things that makes salmon so widely available, aside from farmed salmon, is that a lot of salmon is frozen shortly after it's caught. So the Alaskan wild salmon market industry does a lot of freezing of salmon so they can ship it farther away without losing the integrity of the salmon. And it extends the availability of the salmon, right? It's not like a fresh fish where you have to consume it within a few days. You know, frozen salmon doesn't have to be eaten right away. And there's a little bit of a myth that frozen is not as good as fresh. Again, fresh, if you can get it and you can afford it, it's great. But frozen is also great. It's usually frozen right after it's caught. It's frozen as about at about the most freshest point that it could possibly be without still jumping in the water, right? So don't steer away from frozen fish just because it's frozen. You can find a lot of good deals on frozen fish. The quality is usually excellent. Of course, there's different brands, so do some research, read reviews and things like that. But frozen fish, frozen salmon, a completely good alternative to fresh. Which leads me to my second point, which I mentioned just a second ago, wild versus farmed. Now, if you see, in North America at least, Atlantic salmon, Atlantic being a species of salmon, it's 99% sure that that is a farmed salmon, because though Atlantic salmon was available in the wild for many, many years, the industry in the Northeast, they were overfished and devastated, essentially. So they're not really found in the wild, certainly not commercially in the wild anymore. So when you see Atlantic salmon, you can be nearly 100% certain that that is a farmed fish. So you're not going to find Atlantic salmon at wild caught, at least not in North America. You are going to find the other species of salmon, the Chinook, the Coho, the Sockeye, etc., wild caught. But here's another thing that trips folks up. They assume that just because something says Atlantic salmon, that it's farmed, and if it isn't Atlantic salmon, if it's not Atlantic salmon, it therefore must be wild caught, and that's not the case. So while all Atlantic salmon is farmed, not all of the other species of salmon are wild. Case in point, I went down to my fish market, my local fish market, just a couple of days ago, and I asked them what kind of salmon, whole fish salmon, they had in stock. And they had Atlantic salmon, of course, farmed from up in British Columbia, but they also had Chinook salmon that was farmed from up in British Columbia. So just because you see something that says maybe Chinook or King salmon doesn't mean that it was wild caught necessarily. In fact, I just bought a piece of smoked salmon from the local supermarket because it was on sale, and it's Coho salmon, but it is farm-raised Coho salmon. So again, not Atlantic salmon, but not necessarily wild caught. So is farmed salmon bad? Is it good? You know, at the risk of making judgment calls that you really need to make for yourself, I'm going to say a couple of things, and then I'm going to leave the rest up to you to do your own research. I don't think that farmed Atlantic salmon is bad. You know, and if sustainably raised and farmed, it can be a very good alternative to wild salmon. Now, there's all sorts of ideas about health issues with farm-raised salmon, their feed, the synthetic feed that they're given to let them develop their pink-colored flesh. Because remember I said earlier, while salmon has pinkish to red flesh, it's based on their diet. Well, farm-raised salmon don't have access to that diet, right, in the wild. So they're given food that actually sort of synthetically allows them to develop those colors. Is that good or bad? Again, I'm not going to be like the health guru guy that says, like, never eat farm salmon, but because I don't think that's good advice. What I would recommend is that you do a little bit of your own research so you're informed about what kind of salmon it is that you're procuring. And one of my favorite places to go is, whether it's on the web or if you download an app for your smartphone, is the Monterey Bay Aquarium's Seafood Watch app. It's a fantastic app for seafood consumers. You can type in any type of fish. So you might put in Chinook salmon, for example, and it's going to list out all the places that those Chinook salmon typically come from. And as you're buying your fish, you can find out where it's coming from, and then you can check on Seafood Watch to see what it says. So for Chinook salmon, it might say, I should pull it up here, but I don't have it handy. It'll say something like, oh, well, maybe it's a troll line caught off the coast of Washington. And maybe it says that's a great source for Chinook salmon. And it'll tell you why it's sustainable. There's low levels of, you know, mercury or, you know, whatever it is. And then it might say a good alternative might be farm-raised Chinook salmon from British Columbia. And it'll tell you why. It's like the green, yellow, red scale, right? So look for fish choices that are green, avoid the ones that are yellow or red, and it'll tell you why. So you can look up those farmed salmon, and it's going to tell you everything they know about it and how it was raised and where it came from. So definitely check out the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch app. And don't just, again, poo-poo Atlantic farm-raised salmon because it's not wild-caught Alaskan salmon or whatever. So then, so now you're probably saying, okay, we've talked about Atlantic salmon, and Roger, you've mentioned some other types of salmon. What are those all about? If you pull out a piece of paper, please don't do this if you're driving or mowing the lawn or jogging, but or imagine it in your mind's eye. If you draw a line from one side of the paper to the other, and we'll call this our spectrum, right? Let's just put Atlantic salmon right in the middle of that spectrum and circle it because it's farmed. So we want to keep in mind that's farmed salmon. And then there are five other species of wild salmon, Pacific wild salmon to be specific, that you as a consumer and a home cook are going to run into. And some of them are known by multiple names, and I'm not going to go into all the nitty-gritty details about how each of these species differ physiologically and whatnot, but I want to use this illustration of kind of the spectrum just to give you an idea of where they fall on the fattiness scale, if you will, because that can affect a little bit how you might prepare the salmon. So the on the left-hand side, we'll start with the fattiest ones. And these are probably, you know, the most prized salmon out there. And the biggest and the fattiest and probably the most sought after would be the Chinook. And that's C-H-I-N-O-O-K. Salmon, often referred to as king salmon. So Chinook and king salmon are the same, and they're kind of on the left side of that spectrum, the very rich, oily, fatty side of the salmon spectrum. Moving down the line, you know, these are just general statements, by the way. You know, fish can vary within their own species quite a bit as well. But next, you're probably looking at coho salmon. Coho, C-O-H-O, oftentimes called silver salmon. And then third down the line, I would say sockeye salmon, or also known as red salmon. So you've got Chinook, coho, and sockeye sort of on the left side. Now, the reason I lay them out this way is because if I see one of these three fish available in the market, in the fish market, your grocery store, whatever, I tend to think that these three species of fish, I can kind of do whatever I want with. They're very versatile. They're very fatty. They should be relatively moist. Sockeye sometimes can get pretty lean, so you have to be a little careful with sockeye. But in general, those three species of salmon I can cook however I want, and I won't really have to worry about the outcome. Now, Atlantic salmon's kind of in the middle. They're pretty versatile. Again, you could probably do just about whatever you want with Atlantic salmon, and it's going to turn out fine. Now, as we move right down the scale, we've passed Atlantic salmon, there are a couple of other species that you don't find as often as fish, whole fish in the market. And the next one will be like a pink salmon, oftentimes or sometimes less commonly referred to a humpback or a humpy salmon. Remember earlier I mentioned when they go upriver to spawn, they develop this really crazy hump on their back. Pink salmon are the most abundant of all the salmon, and they're fairly small. They're a few pounds on average each. And a lot of pink salmon is destined for the cannery or smoked salmon, or processed into things like salmon cakes or, you know, that sort of a thing. In fact, most of the canned salmon you see in the store is probably pink salmon. Sometimes you'll see red salmon, but you'll know that's different because it's quite a bit more expensive. So whereas a can of pink salmon might be a couple of dollars, you know, the same size can of red salmon could be $6, $7, $8. And then the fifth species of salmon, which you, I hardly ever see here, but I think it's becoming more and more popular, is the chum salmon, also sometimes known as the dog salmon. Both names not very attractive from a marketing perspective, so you'll see some industrious marketers starting to call it the Keta salmon, the K-E-T-A, and that actually just comes from its scientific name, which I think is Uncle Rhynchus Keta. Anyway, Keta salmon, I've been noticing it more and more turning up in packaged smoked salmon products. So unlikely, again, that you're going to run into these salmon as whole fish or fillets or steaks or something in the fish market counter. But if you do run into pink salmon, if you do run into chum salmon, just know that they run a bit leaner, a little bit drier, a little less oily. So if you're going to be preparing those types of salmon, you want to look at moist cooking methods like poaching or cooking in paper or wrapped in foil, you know, more of a steam that retains some moisture. You know, if you throw those on the grill, they're going to dry out really quickly. So definitely think of a sauce and a moist cooking method with those types of salmon. So to recap in your mind, you've got that sort of a spectrum, right, of salmon. And on the fatty, rich, luxurious, oily side, you've got Chinook or king salmon, coho or silver salmon. And then we start moving towards the middle. You've got your sockeye or red salmon, Atlantic salmon, the farmed version, right? And then moving beyond that, you've got pink and chum salmon, okay? On the drier, less oily, smaller side. And as I said, if you find Chinook, coho, or sockeye salmon for sale and there's a good deal on it, get it because you probably won't be disappointed. They're very flavorful and versatile. And you know what's interesting about the different species of salmon is they can be regionally, they vary regionally on what's available. So for example, in Oregon, you don't see a lot of coho, fresh coho salmon available. They are a closely monitored population because they have been for several years been in danger of being overfished. And they're a very important salmon for native tribes of the Columbia Plateau. Historically. So they're just closely monitored to make sure that resource doesn't get depleted and that there's salmon available for the tribes in the Columbia Plateau first, of course, and then, sport, and then rarely commercial fisheries. That being said, we typically see quite a lot of sockeye, and Chinook's not too hard to find, though. Again, generally expensive. Okay, so now we've kind of done a quick background on salmon. We've talked about some different species. I want to talk about a couple of cooking methods that if you're not a real confident fish cook, I think you can pull off with relative ease. And I'm not going to go into crazy detail about different flavorings, different sauces or spices. I'm going to put some links in the show notes with some websites that have a lot of great recipes and ideas for flavorings you can put on your salmon. But, you know, I come from the school of thought that a fish like salmon is very flavorful on its own. And beyond just some simple salt, pepper, maybe some lemon or white wine or butter or something like that, you don't need to handle it a whole lot. And the same goes for the method of cooking. The less you fuss around and handle your salmon while you're cooking it, the happier you're going to be with results. Now, either way, whatever you end up doing to cook your salmon, I really do recommend deboning the fillet. And we'll just talk about fillets for now. You know, the major bones are not going to be there in your fillet, but there are going to be things called pin bones. And they're called pin bones because they're small like pins, right? Like little stick pins. They're a couple inches long usually, or maybe an inch long. And they kind of float in the meat of the salmon. And I'll put some links to some resources that show you how to remove pin bones from a salmon fillet. It's very easy. It only takes a few minutes. You kind of use your fingers and you can feel where the pin bones are. And you can just take a pair of tweezers or a clean pair of needle nose pliers and just kind of grab the tips of those pin bones and pull them right out. It'll take a few extra minutes while you're prepping. And it's not required, but you know, you don't want to be serving folks salmon where they're going to start biting into sharp little pin bones. That's no fun. I mean, if they know what they're getting into, you can skip it, but I do recommend deboning. Okay. So super easy method number one, and that is a simple oven bake method. So for this, you would want to preheat your oven to 400 Fahrenheit. I think that's about 200 and change Celsius. Get yourself a rimmed baking sheet or a baking dish. And I like to either line it with a little bit of parchment paper or aluminum foil. If you do foil, you know, oil it down first so the fish doesn't stick to it. And then lay your fillet skin side down, hit it with a little bit of salt and pepper right before you intend to put the fish in the oven, and then place it in the top rack of your oven. And you know, depending on the thickness of the fillet, shoot for 8, 10, or 12 minutes. You know, I kind of use the 10 minute per inch cooking rule. Again, a loose rule. But the goal here is that you cook it just long enough to get nearly done, and then when you take it out of the oven, it's going to cook over a little bit and finish the interior. What you're looking for is salmon that's just turned from kind of that translucent glossy look to kind of opaque and less glossy. I know that's a very scientific and precise, but again, if you go way over that, your salmon's going to start to dry out. You'll see the flakes start separating. You know you've gone way too far, and you're kind of beyond repair at that point. But always err on the side of not quite as done as you think it should be, and your salmon will probably be about ready. And you know, when it comes to baking, there's another method that I've been reading about. I've not tried it, but it makes sense. And that is just baking your salmon at a lower temperature. It'll take a little bit longer to cook, but you're less likely to blow past the point of doneness because your temperature is not as high. So there's a little more safety valve built in. And that would be, instead of cooking at 400, maybe cooking at like a 275 Fahrenheit, which is about 135 Celsius. But you know, your salmon might take longer, right? So maybe at about the 15 minute point, you really want to start checking it. And again, if you leave it in for just a minute too long, it's less likely to run away and overcook at that lower temperature. But your fillet may take between 15 and 30 minutes, as opposed to, you know, 10 or 12 minutes doing it at the higher temperature. So that's one method. The other really simple method, if you just have a couple of fillets to cook and, you know, with the baking, you can get several going at once, right? If it's just you or a couple folks that you're cooking for, and you can get a couple of fillets, if you have a nice skillet that'll fit that. My favorite method is probably just frying them right up on the stovetop. So grab a nonstick skillet, heat it on medium-high heat. I drop a good knob of butter right in the pan, and I let that butter cook until it stops foaming. That means the liquid, the water is basically cooked out of that butter. And then, you know, get it good and hot. And then just let the salmon, lay the salmon in gently skin side down. Hit it with a little salt and pepper and let it cook there and let that skin get a little bit crispy for 5-6 minutes or so. And at that point, just gently turn the fish over and let it cook for another 2 or 3 or 4 minutes on the other side. And bam, you're ready to go with that. So that one takes a little more monitoring, right? It's a little more active cooking than just popping something in the oven for 10 minutes. You kind of got to be there and watch it. But it's really fast and it's really flavorful. You know, and if you're putting a meal together where you're having some veggies and some rice, you can basically cook all of that ahead of time. And as that is just sitting and waiting to be plated, you can get your salmon cooking and done, and it'll all come out, you know, at the same time. Now, I said earlier, salmon is versatile when it comes to flavors and spices as well. And, you know, the common ones that you always see are like butter, lemon, dill, capers, maybe white wine, all good. But, you know, you can get adventurous, and butter and brown sugar. I mentioned soy and maple on a podcast episode a little while ago. You could go Southwestern with chipotle and chili seasoning. So you can do a lot with salmon, but I like salmon the way it tastes as is. So I try to do as little as possible to it. But again, I'll put some links to some ideas in the show notes so you can check that out. Oh my gosh, I've already been talking for like 40 minutes, and I could probably go on and on and talk about salmon. In fact, when I was writing out my notes for this episode, I found it very hard to focus myself because I was just, there's so much to talk about. So I hope I put it down in a way that hits the highlights and made salmon a little less mysterious for you. Maybe it wasn't mysterious to begin with, but hey. But you know, hopefully you got some useful information when it comes to salmon out of this. And again, if you've not tried cooking salmon yourself or seafood in general, I hope I've given you a little bit of confidence to perhaps go out and tackle it. As I mentioned, show notes for this episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/134. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I really, really do appreciate it. Love all you guys so much and the support you show me and this show. You know what? If you do want to support me too, the easiest way to do that is just tell somebody else about it. Tell a family member, tell a friend if you're getting some value out of the show and you think they would too. You could also head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review if that sounds like something you can swing. All right, everybody. Once again, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.